what I learned here is that you had to check a box. You were either white or black or Hispanic. And there were no other boxes.
There were no other boxes. Not even box that said other.
No. Yeah. There was none of that at the time.
Yeah.
And there was always a struggle at the beginning about which box that I had to choose.
Today's episode is sponsored by HEB Curbside and Delivery. When life throws you a loop, HEB Curbside and Delivery is here to help. We shop how you shop, so you get exactly what you want. Order today at HEB.com. HEB Curbside and Delivery, it's never been easier to shop HEB.
One of the things that I always look forward to and try to make sure that we do on Our Voices Matter is bring as many different perspectives to our conversation as possible. And always, of course, with the goal of trying to remind us of our common humanity. I've been wanting to have Ida Arasi as a guest for quite some time now. And I'm so happy to finally have her voice lend itself to the ongoing conversation that we have here at OVM. So Ida, thank you so much for being here. Ida is the founding director of the bilateral U.S. Arab Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
That's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. And thank you so much for having me. In fact, it is such a mouthful. We've evolved now to being known as the bilateral chamber. And over the years, but that'll be part of what we talk about. But thank you for having me. This is an honor.
Well, so I know what you do, but just in a nutshell, tell our audience what your focus is and how you're trying to bridge U.S. Arab world.
Sure. So in fact, it's been 22 years, if you can imagine that, 97. I founded an organization called the Bilateral U.S. Arab Chamber with the mandate that it be a platform for people to meet and learn and do business between the U.S. and the Arab world. Mm-hmm. And if I can take you back 22 years ago, people tended to see that region with perhaps a couple of lenses. We had had the Iraq invade Kuwait and the first Gulf War. Mm-hmm. And so we saw that dynamic between us and Iraq.
Right.
And then, of course, the other lens was the Palestinian-Israeli unresolved saga that is unresolved
still
to this
unresolved,
day,
yeah.
right? And is still an issue. And that's basically how we saw that region. And yet there was so much more to that region. Hundreds of millions of people and other countries and other things that were going on, and very few people really were tuned into that.
Aware of it, talking about
right?
it, highlighting it.
Here in particular in Houston, we naturally had a very good relationship from an energy perspective with the energy producing states in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, UAE. Mm-hmm. There was a new producing country called Qatar. It's not a new country, but gas and the discoveries there were coming up. And so I thought, let's talk more about that. There are others that are addressing and resolving and still addressing the Palestinian-Israeli issue. And then the Iraq crisis is something over here, but let's talk about what else there was. And
right.
so that was the reason for the forming of the organization. I was very fortunate enough that I had our two members, Aramco, which is a biggest oil company in the world and has a huge presence here in Houston, and ExxonMobil supported the idea, gave a little bit of seed money, and we started hosting these events when folks from that region came to Houston. Then instead of just going to the OTC, for example, which was very important. The Technology Conference and walking around an exhibition, they now had a platform to come in and exchange bread, as
right.
they say.
Right, have conversation.
Eat together, have
right.
conversation, talk, talk business, talk friendships. And then you started to see this fabric being created.
It's called getting to know each other, right?
And so you know what? No one else was doing it. There was
Crazy.
Nothing else. There was no convening.
right.
of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, so that was just sort of an easy first start, which really laid the groundwork for actually formulating an organization around that very simple thing, mm-hmm. bring people together. And what I started to notice is whether they were coming, for example, from Saudi or even the neighboring countries, Kuwait and UAE, they didn't really convene and get together so much. So it became this annual thing that we worked with the U.S. embassies in these regions, and so the Departments of Commerce would bring and recruit these delegations, and everybody got together. Mm-hmm. And it grew. It started with 100 people. Next year, 200. Now it's, you know, up to over 1,200 people that would convene and come, and it's become a tradition. But mm-hmm. back to that time, all of this was going along swimmingly, as they say, and then 9/11.
Changed everything.
It just a
yeah
trauma
right
across the board.
Stop. Skids.
Everything. Mm-hmm. And obviously the obvious trauma to us as in America, to New York.
Yes.
But to Houston. That year, OTC visitors dropped, not just from the Middle East. Everybody was afraid to travel.
Right.
Because remember, we then established,
well. Yes.
we established stringent, we were scared.
Yes.
Everything mm-hmm. changed. Mm-hmm. Homeland security was mm-hmm. established. And, mm-hmm. and who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? What's going on? Visitors to the Texas Medical Center. I've seen some statistics that it just, you know, 80% drop in international patients. And wow. remember, in particular from the Middle East at that time, these were cash paying customers, very important stakeholders mm-hmm. to the Texas Medical Center. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that had a ripple effect. Hotels, shopping, you know, hospitality, everything else that comes along with that. So right. it was a huge economic impact to Houston in particular.
How did you adapt as a chamber?
Well, so we, you know, there was a lot of conversation about that and about, you know, what are we going to do about this, or what should we do, or is it even within our mandate to do? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should just sit back and think about this. And I started talking to a few folks at the city, at the mayor's office, at you know, different stakeholders at the medical center. The Texas Medical Center has a committee, and we all decided, you know what, let's actually go to the Middle East. What a novel idea that would be.
Instead of bringing them here, which yeah. they were very reluctant to do. This wasn't happening at that point.
It wasn't yeah. happening, and we weren't going, and nobody knew how to break the ice.
Right.
Because it was a little, you know, and so September, of course, 11th happened in September. We started talking to the folks with the mayor. At the time, it was Mayor Lee Brown. And
I remember that.
We made an economic case for why we should go and where we should go. And we put together all sorts of agendas, mm-hmm. That there would be some cooperation agreements that would be signed, that there would be a sister agreement that would be signed. And in that case, it was between Houston and Abu Dhabi, mm-hmm. all kinds of objectives, that a wish list. Mm-hmm. And very fortunate that the mayor agreed. And it was a delegation of about 40 people.
So did it change the dynamic?
It changed everything, Linda. No U.S. mayor had ever gone to Qatar as a U.S. mayor, you know, with a delegation. No U.S. mayor had ever gone to Dhahran or the eastern province of Saudi Arabia, and perhaps to Riyadh. That I don't know, but I can't think of one. Mm-hmm. Certainly not to Abu Dhabi. Maybe to Dubai. I can't think of one. Mm-hmm. No city had ever done this to this extent
right.
with a big delegation. Yep. And so what happened was that the embassies and the ambassadors out there were like, thank you. This gives us an opportunity to re-engage. Because really, everything had kind of been suspended mm-hmm. and careful
right.
and assessing. Mm-hmm. This gave us an opportunity, all of us collectively, to say, us and them, that we're not going to be we are not going to be scared of this. We know who we are. Mm-hmm. We're going to have links of friendship and economic exchange and education exchange, and we're not going to be held hostage to that terror.
To that, right, right.
And that's
we're taking our power back, basically, yeah. And reengaging and conversation and getting to know each other. And
it was amazing. It was amazing. So sister cities were signed. Airport agreements were signed, which was a sensitive subject. Airport agreements.
So
between the Houston airport and
an airport
in Dubai and in Doha, a civil aviation cooperation agreement to start exchange ideas and for ultimately what would become direct air service. So this Houston airport kind of helped lay a framework to help what we now know as Emirates Air coming to the United States, much less to Houston, right?
Wow.
So Houston changed
everything.
Everything. We take advantage. We know now Emirates Air.
I don't think many people know this story. I remember when you took that delegation, because I was still reporting at that time. So I remember that. And it was a big deal.
It was a controversy because some people, you know, not you, but I did have some media interviews and people were like, well, why does we need to go to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
We have plenty of economic activity between Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. What more are you going to do with Saudi Arabia?
Mm-hmm.
And I was the one, of course, a long time ago, kind of trying to field that and tried to give that story, but maybe I wasn't as...
So let's fast forward to where we are today. And how have things changed?
Oh my gosh. So obviously, with regard to those, let's call them those Emirates first and foremost, mm-hmm. you know, everybody knows about Dubai and Doha and Qatar and all these things that are going on there. And there's so much exchange and direct air service and all of that. So we continued to be focused on that region, but we also started to see the dynamics of economic activity as well evolve to folks from that region maybe are joint venturing with U.S. companies and then pursuing an opportunity in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The particular case of that is, for instance, Qatar Petroleum and ExxonMobil and all the business activity that happens with those two, mm-hmm. the IOC and the NOC, mm-hmm. now looking internationally and developing.
Right.
And all of that comes back to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Houston has been really the nexus of so much that goes on globally.
Right.
We're very fortunate to be here.
So in terms of the relationships, the human relationships, and the ease or not so much, the challenges of doing business between American and Middle Eastern companies in the current political climate. So where does that stand now?
Well, you know, that's very dynamic, and that very much depends on what country and what you mean. So that isn't an easy answer.
Mm-hmm.
But the countries of the GCC, that is the Gulf Cooperation Council, the countries of Saudi and Kuwait, mm-hmm. and UAE and Bahrain and mm-hmm. others, they have a very good relationship with our administration. In fact, there has been, remember, President Trump's first visit mm-hmm. Internationally was mm-hmm. was to Saudi Arabia, and as a result, we have, you know, seen an increase in economic activity, and so it's kind of been an improved relationship there
On the economic side.
On an economic side,
but there's also the other side of that when you think about the brutal murder of Khashoggi, and in the Saudi embassy, and, you know, everything that came out of that with the United States not really supporting, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is something that, you know, is an ongoing and unresolved dynamic.
Right.
And in fact, there is so much in the news vis-a-vis things that are going on and you know, whether or not Jeff Bezos' phone was hacked or
not hacked by Saudi.
Issue. There's mm-hmm. so many issues on a daily basis. It's sort of hard to digest that. If you're asking from the perspective of Saudis,
mm-hmm.
that's a very young population that has seen more freedom, mm-hmm. more under the current king mm-hmm. and the crown prince. Mm-hmm. So they are very supportive of their crown prince because they have literally seen a change in their lives.
Right.
And freedom for women. They are now concerts were not allowed. Going mm-hmm. to a theater was not allowed. I mean, mm-hmm. so there is this shift.
Right.
And they are very supportive of that. Whether or not they are tuned in to this other stuff.
Yeah.
They're very supportive. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen ultimately. Will our president be impeached? Will he not be impeached? What's going to happen? Even here, we're like looking.
Well, we may find out today.
I think today
could be the day that we find out.
Are we going to allow witnesses? Aren't we? So mm-hmm. it's almost like everyone else is kind of taken a step to that this is not. I'd call it above our pay grade, but it's almost like we can't impact that. We've got to just focus on how we interact person-to-person basis.
So when you're interacting with some of your members, your constituents, you know, from other parts of the world, what are you hearing from them, aside from the fact that many of them do support this current administration? On a human level, I mean, what are they saying? Have the dynamics changed in terms of the relationships at all?
If you're talking about again in the Middle East, mm-hmm. I think that everyone, I don't know what everyone thinks. Let's stay there.
Course,
and you're
obviously.
Asking me what they're thinking or what they're.
Or if just any conversations that you might have had.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the conversations that I have is that people are wondering about how we're going to react to. These issues that, from their perspective, they don't think are such a big deal because, mm-hmm. remember, they don't necessarily, these countries have necessarily transparent and mm-hmm. democratic leadership, right?
Right.
So sometimes they view us as, well, are you making such a big deal out of these things? Is your economy doing all right? That seems to be their general attitude from the business people that I talk to. Mm-hmm. Do they react when they see things like a Muslim ban? Does that make them fearful, mm-hmm. hesitant? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are they wondering about how Americans view them? I think that they're seeing, in particular in the more wealthy nations, more bilateral activity, mm-hmm. more economic activity. So everyone is just sort of in a wait and see mode.
Wait and see. Yeah.
That's
so. Let's talk a little bit about your backstory and the, the global perspective that you bring to your work and why you felt this was so important. I know you speak three languages, right? Obviously, English and French and Arabic.
Arabic, yes.
So, share with our audience a little bit of where you grew up, how you grew up, and what you bring to this passionate. Cause of yours?
Well, you know, so I grew up, I was born in Tunis and in Tunisia. Mm-hmm. And my parents came here when I was 6 years old. My father had come before and been a student at the University of Houston and just fell in love with the American dream mm-hmm. and the concept of the American dream. And went back to Tunisia and convinced my mother to leave. Actually, she was a media figure in Tunisia.
Really?
So my mother and my father had been part of the team that launched the first TV station in Tunisia in the 60s.
Wow.
So she was the first image on national television in Tunisia, and he was, because he had a communications degree from the University mm-hmm. of Houston, and that's where they met, in fact, in Tunis for this launch of television in Tunisia, and but he convinced her to walk away from that and come to this amazing city where they had a something called the Astrodome, which was, you know. That was like a big deal.
A big
it was
deal.
The only one of its kind
right.
and had all these firsts. Uh-huh. Houston was a city of firsts. So they came and I, you know, in the 70s mm-hmm. and we started a life here and I grew up here. And this region, going back to Tunisia in particular, and then coming here, I remember my first year in first grade. Where everybody in school, this is kind of a funny story because I didn't speak any English, but I had to learn. Mm-hmm. I had to immerse myself. And what I learned here is that you had to check a box. You were either white or black or Hispanic. And there were no other boxes.
There were no other boxes. And not even box that said other.
No. Yeah. There was none of that at the time.
Yeah.
And there was always a struggle at the beginning about which box that I had to choose.
What did you check?
And, well, so, to ask my father, and, well, we're Caucasian. You have to choose that white. And I'd be like, well, I'm not as white as the white girls, but okay. And then I'd go back to class. And the children were like, well, you know, the Hispanic girls think I was one of them, but mm-hmm. I didn't speak Spanish or wasn't. And so they kind of were like, okay. And then the white girls were, okay, are you're with us, but maybe not. And then somebody would learn that I was from this place called Tunisia, and that was in Africa. And the black girls, oh, you're over here.
You're one of us.
You're one of us. And I'd be like, I don't know where I belong. By the third grade, okay, I was always interested in geography, and I had to check that doggone box, and then I had to fit, and I just said I was from Hawaii. Everybody accepted
that. Left you alone.
And they left me alone, and they knew what that was. And
oh, my gosh.
I really, that's, you know, the first few years, because explaining Tunisia was just... and having to deal with that, and, well, you don't look African, but maybe you are, and don't you want to be black, or don't you want, you know what I'm saying?
I mean,
it was kind of...
Yeah.
It was hard.
Wow.
So that was my first experience.
So you're
in
laughing about it now, but I can imagine that was pretty traumatizing.
It was hard. I was challenged for some after school fights as a little girl because people don't like other. Which is and one time I remember this. I remember, you know how we remember things.
Yeah.
It was first grade. I saw a little boy, and I knew he wasn't Hispanic, and I knew he wasn't black, and he wasn't white. He was Indian. And so I went and sat next to him. I go,
You're other,
and
like me.
And he's like, no.
You're other.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was interesting, but it taught me, because of course, you know, it taught me, and there wasn't English as a second language back then either. It just taught me adaptability and perspective, and I didn't know it was teaching me that. I didn't know that until later.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting thing growing
up. Wow. And that's what you bring to your work now, is that perspective, and that's why you're able to look at people just as people and not as labels.
100%. 100%. That, you know, we all come at this thing called life with so many synergies that are the same. It just has different names sometimes. We all want generally the same things as human beings.
And it's not like we had a choice as to how we popped out of the womb in terms of our skin color and our hair and, you know, just who we are. I mean, we were all made in the image of whoever, whatever supreme being you want to call it.
Indeed, indeed.
I want to take a moment to welcome our newest sponsor, BMW of West Houston. Full disclosure, I'm a customer and have been for the last several years. I switched from another brand, which shall remain nameless, and I've never looked back. From the sedans to the SUVs, BMW of West Houston will put you in the ultimate driving machine of your dreams. The X5 and the X7, they're both on my wish list for when this podcast hits a million listeners. So please share away. A girl can dream. Check out this month's deals at BMWWest.com.
As I grew up here, and the population of immigrants did grow in Houston, they didn't grow from Tunisia. They grew from the Middle East. So there's plenty of people here that are of Palestinian origin and Egyptian origin and so on, but not Tunisian. So there's mm-hmm. still that other, because mm-hmm. actually it is a very dynamic and diverse region. There's different religions. The basic language is Arabic, but there's different dialects. And in fact, if you're from Tunisia and you're speaking to a Egyptian or an Iraqi, you end up speaking in English to understand each other.
Really, because the dialects are so different.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
And Tunisia is a smaller country, and so Tunisians mm-hmm. tend to mm-hmm. adopt the more dominant dialect mm-hmm. or Arabic language, but right. it's a diverse place.
Right.
And even there, you know, various things, you know, we went back to 9/11, but then other things changed. The region changed. The Arab Spring happened. Yes. Countries changed. The young people, because there's a youth quake out there, had always been, what are we going to do with those young people? Where are they going to find jobs? They're going to, you know, react. Now they have access to the internet, access to how other people live, and they're demanding that. Mm-hmm. So it is it's a shift, and it's happening now. And by the way, you noticed last year, Hong Kong and Peru and Algeria, where haven't we had protests? Because right. young people all over the world, I don't know what the term is. I don't know what the term woke means.
Maybe they're woke.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're paying attention.
They're
paying attention, and they're engaging.
And yes. they're not going to put up with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They really aren't. They're going to hold power accountable.
Right. Greta. Okay. There are a lot of Gretas out there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Everywhere. And although it is causing disruption, because you asked me at the beginning, you know, how is that affecting? There's been I would call it a reaction to globalism, like no, mm-hmm. a counter to globalism.
Right.
And in fact, even on an administration level, mm-hmm. America First, mm-hmm. Tendency mm-hmm. to isolation now, mm-hmm. you know, globalism mm-hmm. isn't such a great thing anymore.
Brexit.
Yeah. Megxit.
Megxit.
Well, another thing.
That's a whole other story. We're not going to go there.
Okay.
Okay.
But it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And how does that affect trade?
Mm.
Well, you know, 90% of the consumers are outside of our borders. If we, but we're going to, you know, we have to be global. But maybe we have to be global now in a more truly mutually beneficial way, mm-hmm. mutually respectful way,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. a way that definitely respects human rights, labor rights, climate rights, all of us.
And how do we get there?
You know, I think that, as I said, I think that the population is demanding it.
Mm-hmm.
The populace is demanding it. It's happening. It's
yeah.
happening.
Yeah,
I know there's a lot of bad too.
It just, you know, it feels like we're in this space where there's this struggle between what was and what will be, and we are trying so hard to find our individual and our collective places within the dynamics of everything that's going on. And, you know, I think that when I look at the young people that you're talking about who mm-hmm. are disrupting and who are rising up and who are woke, that gives me hope.
Yeah.
Because in the not too distant future, they're going to be the ones in control. And I think the world will be a very different place than it is right now. And I think we're seeing the battle that always happens when change, real substantive change, is on the horizon.
Yes, yes, that is exactly right. And, you know, remember, there are people that are paid to forecast, and researchers and PhDs, and they're all trying to help companies navigate this rising tide of uncertainty.
Right.
And no one can predict.
Right.
They just are saying it could go in either direction. It's like when we try to forecast a hurricane,
mm-hmm.
and we've got all these different directions it could go.
Are your chamber members generally feeling optimistic? What are you hearing and feeling from them?
So, you know, I'm seeing that, and depends on the level. So we try to provide a platform for SMEs, and then also provide a platform for our corporate stakeholders to gather. And I think that there is now more, with the exception of what's happened this week with the coronavirus, I was going to say, because, you know, like since last time,
I was going to say
that people are generally comfortable getting on a plane and going out there and pursuing a business opportunity. So, I, when we took delegations 20 years ago or to Dubai, I've had people take bulletproof vests. They were so afraid. They were willing. They were willing to go.
But they didn't know what to expect.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, people get it and they want to be international and they're comfortable and there are so many platforms. But and so there is more exchange, more joint venturing, more collaboration. But if you look at the projects everywhere, there has been a slowdown in capital and in support of these projects. There has been kind of a stop.
You think that's because of the political uncertainty?
I think it's because of the uncertainty.
Yeah, yeah.
Banks are not stepping up. There's a lot of cash. There's a lot of cash out there. They're just, once again, I'm seeing this era of cautiousness. And that's going to impact some major companies.
Yeah, and we probably won't see that change until after the election. Do you think?
I agree.
Yeah.
I think because people are just waiting to see what happens so that they can forecast either way.
Yeah. And every day seems to bring something new. And like you say, last week, heard of the coronavirus?
You and I had a coffee and we talked about, well, I'll give you an example. We're taking a delegation to Vietnam.
Really?
And we had, a major U.S. company. It's all U.S. companies that are going to develop, to showcase their expertise or sell their LNG or their gas. So it's a really interesting story. And we had one company that has an executive that it was going to come out of Beijing. And, you know, when he's emailed and said, well, am I welcome on the trip? I don't know. Vietnam gonna? Are they stopping flights? Like this is a
day
by day.
Is this an imminent trip?
This is an imminent trip.
Wow. Yeah.
Do we delay the trip? Do we go on the trip? I mean, this is something that we're assessing on a minute by minute basis.
Sure.
Are we making too much of it? Mm-hmm. But who can forecast? Who are the experts? Travel advisories have been risen to level 4 by the State Department vis-a-vis China. How is that going to impact things and what blowback is that going to affect for us? Mm-hmm. I tell you, it seems that it is on a daily basis that there is news out there that is impacting decisions.
Yes.
And companies are facing this uncertainty and it's very difficult.
Wow. So as we navigate these treacherous waters, it's like my head's exploding. It's like day by day. But I get the sense from you, first of all, you're a very optimistic person because that's just who you are. That's in your DNA. But, because you have such a global perspective and because you are in these circles where decisions are being made and you're really in the trenches with this. As you kind of roll up your sleeves and get to work every day, do you feel like when you get up in the morning you want to pull the covers over your head? Do you just say, okay, I got this. We're gonna be fine.
I have those days I don't get out of, I feel like I don't want to get out of bed. Because it's a lot to digest and people aren't looking to me as the expert, but I think it's even more important what we do, which is we bring different folks together. In fact, we have an upcoming event where we're going to have recently retired U.S. ambassadors from the region of the former U.S. ambassador to Iraq and Kuwait and Libya and Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Okay.
And these are people that are just tremendous. These are long career members of,
and
of this.
And you're bringing them
together. And they're going to talk to our stakeholders. And they're going to talk amongst themselves because they have different perspectives about the future of this, these dynamics between us and the region of the Middle East, Iran. Maybe they're going to touch upon, you know, this new Palestinian-Israeli dynamic and, and our role in that.
Right.
And so those are the people that I look to and listen to. Mm-hmm. They don't all have one voice. But now that they are former diplomats,
they can speak more freely.
Very freely.
Okay.
And this is something that, that you know, our members definitely cherish that opportunity.
Well, to be a fly on that wall, huh?
Well, maybe I'll invite you.
Yeah.
Invite you to
be in the room where it happens, right?
It's very interesting having the former diplomats speak. Because they can talk about, you know, you asked me these questions about, well, how does the region see us now that we're under this administration or the former administration or the one before that? And these are people that are certainly have 30-year careers, and they can really talk about that dynamic more thoroughly. And I look forward to that. From the perspective of our now becoming the, we're the bilateral chamber, so a lot of people have been like, well, how are you doing that? Well, you know, our corporate stakeholders, which have grown and are incredible people, such as this person in Beijing representing a U.S. company, our stakeholders have a global mandate. So when we announce a trade mission to Vietnam, or when we've been, as we have been awarded through the U.S. Trade and Development Agency, trade missions that we're bringing inbound to the U.S., it has been from Indonesia, the Philippines, Vietnam, China, and we have a convening power of being able to bring in the right folks that are interested in this country or that country, and that's been very exciting. Mm-hmm. So the organization, which perhaps I had a particular vision for it, it succeeded the vision. And it's been amazing. And I really think that being in Houston has been the secret. That's been the secret sauce.
How interesting.
You know? Things are happening here. Things are happening. It starts with energy, though. It starts with energy. Because when you look at the development, the responsible development of energy, for example, Mozambique. I love the story of Mozambique. It's a big gas discovery there. And Exxon and Anadarko, the Fluor Corporation, all kinds of major corporate stakeholders that are from Houston are doing business there. Well, first there's the energy that happens. And then how does the leadership of a particular country take that money and invest it in the country? There have been African countries that haven't done a good job of that. And in fact, you know, that haven't shared any of that with their countries.
But in Mozambique.
And I think in Mozambique, they have a different vision. The president has come. He has brought every minister, agriculture, health, tourism. He wants it all. He wants to be what he sees is going on in or has happened in the UAE. He wants to see a new airport. He wants ports. He wants education. He wants health care. And where does he come? To Houston for that. And I think that's the things that make that keep me a little bit excited. Those are the days I get out of
those
bed.
Those are the
excited.
Days you take those covers off, right? Okay, I'm ready to face the world.
Because that's mutual.
Yeah.
Right? It's a mutual benefit.
Right.
And it feels like you're doing something good because it is good for the people. It's good for us. It's good for them. I'm still an optimist.
You're still an optimist. That's what I want to hear. And so excited to have the chamber. I mean, really, how fortunate for Houston to have you doing this work here. And so I love what you're talking about from that level. But what's your advice to just the everyday person out there who is being othered or is othering somebody and maybe after listening to your story recognizes that they're doing that? What can we do as individuals, do you think?
Gosh, that's such a great question. And, you know, sometimes I think back and I say, wow, back then, if I had access to the, you know, social media or the internet, or I could have found my community. Mm. Like, I could have found folks that were more like me. Mm-hmm. But as you know, the internet and social media definitely could be a force for
double-edged
sword. Oh my gosh,
yeah.
Is it ever? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's sort of about the inside you being strong, but who's strong? Like, mm. as a young person, I think it's about interacting with people and finding people where you're feeling that positive synergy. Mm-hmm. I think that we should do more. Like I did in early days, you know, I didn't do this by myself. I'm not brilliant. I found people that I thought were brilliant and I tried to hitch my wagon to them. You know, I learn, mm-hmm. ask questions, mm-hmm. Be curious. And you really have to turn off the negativity. If I could talk about some pop culture, Lizzo.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Love her, yes.
Look at that.
Yeah.
You know, when,
yeah.
when I was a teenager, you had to look a certain way. And here yeah. is this amazing, beautiful, talented young lady. And I think that what I'm seeing—
From Houston,
from
by
Houston,
the way.
From Houston, by the way.
Yes.
Just saying,
mm-hmm.
no, I'm not listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm great.
I'm beautiful.
I'm smart. More role models
mm-hmm.
like that
mm-hmm.
for young mm-hmm. young folks.
Yes.
More role models.
Yes.
And I hope that there will be more like her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I agree. And what you said is kind of our motto around here, which is that you have to be willing to give people permission to speak. And you have to be willing to listen to them with an open mind.
Indeed.
In order for that message to come through, to be able to engage and to ask questions and be curious.
Yes,
if you
yes.
don't understand somebody's culture or why they do something in a certain way, ask respectfully.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
And learn and explain your point of view and why you do things the way that you do. And you know, and relish in the beauty of our differences and what makes us common.
Indeed. Do we have time for one more story?
Yes, of course. We can take as much time as you want.
One more story
yes.
is, you know, as the organization has grown,
yeah.
I get ideas from all kinds of people. But one program that we did and we launched in 2008 is we used to take students before on interesting trips to maybe Egypt. And, you know, we would align with one of the universities and mm-hmm. then help create a great agenda for the students. Loved that. But it dawned on me that if you take teachers have access. It's an exponential, a multiplier.
Of course.
A teacher is a multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
So we started focusing just on teachers. Sometimes it was pre-K, you know, high school. Sometimes mm-hmm. it was university. Sometimes it was a mix. And we have found that to be, so we have a little program called Teachers Educating Across Cultures in Harmony.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great little,
yes.
I mean, and oh my gosh, I don't have the imagination that these teachers do. And they have gone out and we've taken them to Qatar and Saudi and Bahrain and UAE. And now we have interest to take them to places like Ghana and to Egypt as teachers and other places. We mm-hmm. just don't have enough resources to do it all, but we mm-hmm. would love to. And we have found the, let's call it the ROI, the return on investment has been incredible. Because these teachers come back and just that opportunity to see, feel, meet their counterpart teachers, understand the society.
In other parts of the world.
Judge it on their
yeah.
own.
Mm-hmm.
We don't try to tell them what to, you know, they mm-hmm. judge it on their own and they come back and they see things that we don't see, issues, problems, opportunities. And for, I'll give you an example, it always comes back to Houston. Now, we take teachers from all over the country.
Okay.
We've covered almost every state in the United States.
Wow.
Okay. But we had one adjunct professor from the Houston Community College, and he went to Qatar. And he looked around and they had this thing. You've been to Qatar, right?
I have.
Have you been to Education City?
Yes.
So he looked around, but this was in 08.
Okay.
And he sees this amazing, beautiful universities, campuses that would be dream campuses.
Mm.
A little bit empty though. Because these universities, like Texas A&M, they didn't lower their standards for admission.
Right.
It's not easy to get into these universities, even for Americans. So what do? Well, we have community colleges. Community colleges bring you up, bring that level up, and sometimes get that student ready.
Right.
And so this adjunct professor said, you know, they don't have that. They don't have that bridge step, that bridge. And he came back and he talked to the board folks at HCC, and they ended up going back on their own. They signed an agreement with the Ministry of Education. And now there is a community college in Qatar. Thousands of students are graduating from there.
Wow.
Again, I call that a Houston story. That's one person.
That's the multiplier. That's the multiplier.
That's what keeps me optimistic.
Yeah.
And that's because somebody takes the time.
Right.
Go out, talk, see, listen, learn, and make it a mutual thing. And that's why we call it the bilateral chamber.
Wow. And you've brought it full circle, and it's a perfect place to end our conversation. Thank you so much,
Ida. Thank you for having me. This has been great. I should have done this a long time ago.
We should have had the cameras rolling or the microphones on through all of our conversations through the years, but I think we encapsulated a lot right here. So
thank you.
And I hope our audience will take away from this as much as I did. I learned so much, you know, even though we've known each other for a while. Really appreciate you and your perspective.
And thank you for what you do. This is really, you know, we need more conversations. We need to learn more. We're all so busy. And you've had some incredible people on, and you do. Thank you for what you do to this,
well,
to this community and this city.
You know, this is my passion and my heart, and I'm going to keep doing it because there are too many stories out there that need to be told and shared. So thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time to listen and watch, giving Ida permission to speak, and having the courage to listen with an open mind. We'll see you next time.